Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm going to continue saying this for a while. Blessed Lent. We are joyously within the season of Lent. It's one of my favorite seasons of the year because it's difficult. And yes, you heard me say that right. It is a difficult season and it's meant to be difficult. This year, I want to begin by talking about the fact that there are pieces of church news that we need to address that are not so comfortable, chief among which is the Priestly Society of St. Pius X. It says that it's going to proceed with plans to consecrate new bishops on July the 1st. My friend Dr. Matthew Bunsen joins us with more. We have some news that's a little more uplifting. This particular bit of news is disappointing, and I'm not optimistic, neither is Matthew for that matter, about how this is going to shake out. And so my caution to everyone listening right now, because I've seen so many well-meaning Catholics come out of the woodwork in support of what the SSPX might be doing, and I want to say perhaps many people don't quite understand, but we do not ever want to err on the side of infidelity to the magisterium. And so as well-meaning as the members of the society might be, we need to focus our hearts on the fact that this is Jesus' church, and therefore he will never lead us astray within that church. We go on from there to speak with my friend David Deevil. Only the lover fasts. Only those who love know how to fast and fast well, and not just from food, but the mortification of the flesh for the sake of union with God truly. And that's what we're going to talk about. To that end, as you're diving into your season of Lent, if you would like a free copy of my ebook, I'm blessed to be able to give away, the publishers allowing me to give away the ebook for free for a certain amount of time. Lavished in Love, it's daily short Lenten meditations. If you go on avemariaradio.net/Lent or avemariaradio.net and click on the slider, it takes you to a link where you can sign up and receive the link to download my free ebook. And I'm blessed to have produced a day-by-day meditation with Ignatius Press and the Catholic Study Bible app. And so daily two-minute meditations to help you dive deeper into the season. Why? So that we can become greater lovers of God in this season of Lent. All this after the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, February 19th. It's the Feast of St. Conrad. And today's news is brought to you by Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. The former Prince Andrew has been released from police custody in the UK. British police detained the brother of King Charles for several hours today in connection to his dealings with convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. It involves the former Duke of York allegedly sharing confidential information with Epstein while Andrew served as a trade envoy, not for sexual misconduct. This marks the first arrest of a senior British royal in nearly 400 years. King Charles expressed his deepest concern about the news and added authorities had the royal family's full and wholehearted support. A journalist and an activist are pleading not guilty to federal charges connected to the church protest in St. Paul. Independent reporter Georgia Fort and Tahern Cruz, a co-founder of Black Lives Matter Minnesota, entered their pleas during a brief arraignment. They're facing charges of conspiracy against the rights of religious freedom at a place of worship and violating the FACE Act. The charges come from a January 18th protest at City's church against one of its pastors, David Easterwood, who is the acting director of ICE's field office in St. Paul. Georgia Fort and former CNN host Don Lemon were told of the protest in advance and were documenting the demonstration. And a nasty storm is on the move, heading into the Midwest today. Damaging winds up to 65 miles per hour and tornadoes could be seen from St. Louis through Indianapolis and Louisville. Most of the severe threat will shift into Ohio by the end of the day. Forecasters are also tracking a possible nor'easter along the East Coast for Sunday and Monday. From the Ave Maria Radio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Joining me, as he does every week very generously, is my dear friend, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. And we are talking about church news, current events in light of church teaching. Matthew, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Oh, great to be with you. And I have to say that it was a privilege and really a great joy. Just a lot of fun to be able to spend time with you and Brian and everyone else on the Good News Cruise last week. It seems hard to imagine that it was already a week ago.
Oh, gosh. It's already been almost a full week since we left. A lot has happened since we last spoke about these issues on the air. I want to begin by talking about the Board of Peace. You and I touched on this. We giggled about it a little. And the outcome turned out to be exactly what we thought. But, you know, it was diplomatic of them to take some time to consider.
Yeah. So you're referring, of course, to the Board of Peace that was created by President Trump. He invited a number of governments to participate in it. Essentially, there was a buy-in of about $1 billion. And ostensibly was created to assist in the implementation of the 20-point plan to end the war in Gaza. And each government pledged, saying billions of dollars in the pursuit of the lasting peace there. It is very clear diplomatically that this is a sidestep, that this is an effort to go around the United Nations and to, in some ways, rebuild the global order. And most of the European countries have chosen not to participate. And one of the invitations that was sent out by the Trump administration was to Pope Leo XIV, for the Vatican, the Holy See, to participate in the Board of Peace. At the end of January, they mentioned that that was certainly something they were considering. But we know now that their official position is that the Holy See will not participate in this Board of Peace. And they issued a number of different reasons. But I think at the heart of it is the Holy See's commitment, the Holy Father's commitment to the structure and the legacy of the United Nations.
I'm really glad you bring that particular issue up, because that's been a big part of the conversation I'd like to invite you to speak into. By the Holy See doing this, rejecting entry, if you will, or participation in the Board of Peace, it doesn't mean that the Holy See is then avowing complete allegiance to the United Nations either, but there clearly is a conflict of interest that is being addressed.
Yeah, that's right. So there are a couple of points I think that need to be looked at. The first is that obviously the Board of Peace is a peculiar creation. I'm not judging it in any way. It's peculiar in the sense of that it is out of the ordinary in the approach to finding peace, certainly in the Middle East and elsewhere around the world. The Holy See, for its part, mentioned that the very particular nature of the Board of Peace, and Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State, made that pretty clear when he spoke to the press right after a meeting at the Palazzo Borromeo, ironically on the occasion of the anniversary of the Lateran Pacts, which date back all the way to 1929, which helped create what we now think of as the sovereign state of Vatican City. And he mentioned that it is particular because it is clearly not that of other states. So in other words, this is something highly unusual. Now, when you add to that, that he went on to say that there were a few other points that he used the word perplexed that would need to be explained. So he isn't completely shutting the door to the participation of the Holy See at some point in the future, but there are obvious needs for clarification. And he said one major concern is that at the international level, it is primarily the United Nations that manages these crisis situations. So as he said, this is a point on which we have emphasized. Now, what does that mean? It means that the Holy See recognizes the traditional locus of an effort, successful or not, as history has proven, in the United States to deal with these types of situations. Now, that is also a reflection of the longstanding commitment of the Holy See, and this dates back many, many years, to the idea of a multilateral approach. Multilateralism meaning that you want to involve a lot of different states in crisis solving, again, within sort of the shadow or within the structure of the United Nations as the recognized international body for trying to resolve them. So I think this is just the Holy See's commitment to what has long been practiced diplomatically, and I don't think it sees at this point any benefit in rupturing that for what may ultimately be a temporary board consistent with the present Trump administration.
I invite your wisdom, therefore, to also comment on the countries that have participated in this Board of Peace. Most noteworthily, many of the more influential and developed Islamic nations in the Middle East. I invite you to enlighten our listeners as to what's the thought process behind that.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things at work. About 25 countries have announced their participation. A few aren't particularly surprising. Argentina, with Javier Milei, who is a close global ally of President Trump. El Salvador, which also has a very conservative and admittedly very successful president. And then also Hungary, which is one of the strongest supporters of the Trump administration and the implementation of many of the immigration policies that really do have it standing out in comparison to the rest of Europe. Closest nearby would be Poland. But you're absolutely right that we have a number of other countries, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Morocco in particular, are on board with this plan. Why? I think because they want to have a seat at the table. President Trump right now is the dominant political force. He is the one who brought about, in so many different ways, the current situation of peace or the movement toward peace in Gaza. And I think there's a classic diplomatic parlance says they want to have a seat at the table. They want to be able to influence the longer term stabilization of the region. It's in their best interest to do everything they can to try to bring stability to the region, because the alternative, as we have seen in Gaza, with Iran, in Syria, in Iraq, it's a grim prospect should a regional war erupt, such as the risk that currently exists with Iran, but the regional war that everyone was concerned might erupt out of Israel's campaign in Gaza, justified as Israel feels that it was, as well as its interventions in Lebanon, in trying to exterminate Hezbollah, which of course is one of the most committed of the enemies of Israel.
What this also communicates to us is that despite the clearly Islamic identities of each of those nations constitutionally, there is a collective interest of self-preservation, contrary to some of the movements we're seeing governmentally in, as you mentioned, Iran, Iraq, and most definitely Hamas.
Yeah, precisely. And I think you make an important distinction, too, between Hamas and the Palestinian people. And that always that's a point that always has to be made. You know, the pro-Palestinian movement, certainly in Western countries, has received a great deal of financial support from left-wing causes, and most frequently does not differentiate between Hamas and, say, the Palestinian Authority or the Palestinians themselves. Who are trapped in many ways in this cycle of violence that the Hamas has, especially since October 7th and its vicious attack on Israel with the corresponding result of the Gaza campaign. So self-preservation, I think, is a very keen word to apply to this set of circumstances, because, again, these countries want to be able to influence what comes in the future. And they see right now, at least, the Board of Peace as their best option, given the dominance of President Trump and the Trump administration. Under,
so we need to pause
but I think
there,
it's been a very talented thing with Marco Rubio.
Thank you. I'm talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. The music is hitting. We continue on the other side of the break, talking about church news and current events in light of church teaching. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Beat. I'm talking with my dear friend, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. And we're talking about church news, current events. Matthew, we were just talking about the Board of Peace and all of the moving parts affiliated with that. I want to move on to very quickly look at the situation with the Society of St. Pius X. When we covered it before, we knew there would be updates. We both suspected, maybe prophetically, that it wouldn't go favorably. What's happening now?
Yeah, well, so the last we talked, I think, the heads of the Society of St. Pius X, in this particular case, so Father Pagliarani, had met with the head of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, and that's Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, in an effort to head off an impending crisis with the plan on the part of the Society of St. Pius X to consecrate several bishops. Without, obviously, a papal mandate, which, of course, would constitute a very severe break in communion and would, of course, halt all of the talks that had been ongoing. Well, after they went back, the heads of the Society of St. Pius X, again, under Father David Pagliarani, issued a response. And the response, basically, is that while they are willing to have dialogue for them, they are essentially saying that they are walking away and that they continue to plan to consecrate those bishops on July 1st, again, without a papal mandate. Now, obviously, this represents the risk of decisive rupture or what has also been phrased as grave consequences. And what's interesting is that in the letter from Father Pagliarani, it's important and I know you've read the letter, and I'm sure you've dissected it, too, that for them, the doctrinal questions for them remain paramount, even though the DDF, the Dicastery Doctrine of the Faith, had just recently proposed what, from its side, described as, quote, a specifically theological path of dialogue, looking again at what would be considered the minimum conditions for full communion. But the SSPX has decided in its new statement that the characterization of unauthorized consecrations as potentially schismatic. They disagree with that. He's trying to cloak this within what they claim would be a genuine case of conscience, and that the doctrinal conflicts remain very severe, and that they are not, in their view, in a position to dialogue further, at least in the sense of the discussion, the ecclesiological realities flowing from the Second Vatican Council, and of course the liturgical changes and reforms that followed.
Based on the statement, it became very clear to me, at the very least, that the society was remaining completely unchanging in terms of its stalwart mission for a version of the faith that pre-exists the Second Vatican Council. And so any number of teachings, developments, and definitely ecclesial obedience is brought into question based on that definition. I invite you to comment on why that's a concerning stance to hold, and how we the faithful ought to be cautious and remain magisterially faithful.
From the position laid out in this letter, and he goes on to say that to us, this is Father Pagliarani, it does not seem possible to enter into a dialogue to define what the minimum requirements might be for ecclesial communion simply because his task does not belong to us. That's a somewhat interesting but curious position to take. They seem to hold the position as he puts it, the criteria for belonging to the church have been established and defined by the magisterium. So that we're back to the basic problem here of the rejection of the Second Vatican Council and everything that has followed. And he goes on also to note that the set of texts open to, as he says, the Second Vatican Council is not a set of texts open to free interpretation, has been received, developed, and applied for 60 years by successive popes. That simple recognition would tell you that from the Catholic Church's position, this is set. And the unwillingness then to budge on some of those key points, I think, is creating the impasse. But the one saving hope here is that these consecrations are not scheduled until July 1st. That's still some months away. So there is at least the possibility then of further discussion leading to, again, what the DVF has described as a specifically theological path of discussion. Now, we can always ask, what does that mean in terms of a theological specific path? That we'll have to see. But I think one point will and will always remain the teachings of the Second Vatican Council and the acceptance of it by the Church, the implementation of it by an ecumenical council, the foundational documents that it has informed in the papal magisteriums of multiple popes since then. So we are here then at an ecclesiological and liturgical impasse. Mm-hmm. And personally, I'm not particularly optimistic that that some sort of a resolution can be achieved, in part because for its part, the SSPX is determined to do this. And the consequences speak for themselves in church law, but also in church theology.
You and me both, my friend, and we'll have to pray, and also pray that the faithful don't get swayed by these events. To shift gears into doctrinal issues, the situation with Notre Dame University, Vatican officials have weighed in. There's a real controversy here. What do we know?
Yeah, so obviously when we're talking about Notre Dame, we're talking about what is for many people a really heartbreaking situation. Mm-hmm. Because Notre Dame itself chose to appoint a ardently pro-abortion person to take on a very significant position in teaching. And it's a pro-abortion professor, and it has really raised the question about the Catholic identity of one of the country's most important universities, and is it truly committed to all of the teachings of the Church? So what we're really speaking about is the appointment of somebody to take over University of Notre Dame's Asian Studies program. In this case, the objections to this appointment stemmed from the fact that this person who's going to be put in charge of it holds a position not just ardently supporting abortion, but using some really intense language in support of it, and even connecting opposition to it to things like white supremacy. So in this case, it's Susan Osterman, who's supposed to become the Institute for Asian Studies' new leader on July 1st. Mm-hmm. That appointment led to several resignations of Notre Dame professors. It has led to a pretty significant uproar among much of the student body. Bishops in the United States and around the world expressed their grave concerns over all of this. But Notre Dame, to no one's particular surprise, has announced basically they're doubling down on this appointment. And I think that is a very unfortunate position. Now, as you note, the president of the Pontifical Academy for Life weighed in. That's Monsignor Renzo Pegoraro, mm-hmm. Who was asked about this controversy. And he said that abortion is not acceptable as a practice, and that it is a responsibility not only of individuals but of society to help women and couples avoid the idea that abortion could be a solution to a difficult pregnancy or a problem. But he did add that, as he says, we try to see how to maintain a debate about convincing people that abortion is not only a solution to a problem but is a big challenge. And he said that we try to stress more the ethical and some social aspects, not immediately, he says, only the legal aspects of this. So some probably were frustrated that they would have preferred a more fulsome denunciation. But as we have seen in the past, coming out of the Pontifical Academy for Life and with that many Vatican officials in general, they assume a much more diplomatic tone, as is their wont to do.
Well, Matthew, thank you very much for your time discussing all these pieces of church news. My guest has been Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News. We've been talking about church news and current events in light of church teaching. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, Teach Me to Pray, the free Ignatian prayer series, will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Are we always obliged to obey our conscience? The Catholic Catechism asserts that we are always obliged to obey the certain judgment of our conscience, and that if we deliberately act against a good conscience, we condemn ourselves. On the other hand, our moral conscience may remain in ignorance, and thus we can make erroneous judgments about acts performed in the future or those performed in the past. If ignorance is caused by personal responsibility or negligence, we are culpable of the sin we commit. Some of the causes of erroneous judgment can be ignorance of Christ and his gospel, bad examples of peers, enslavement to one's passion, rejection of the church's authority and her teaching, lack of conversion and lack of charity. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
She was a mystic and reformer who died at the age of 33.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Catherine of Siena accomplished something no one thought possible. She convinced Pope Gregory XI to return to Rome after the popes had lived in France for almost the whole of the 14th century. They've been there ever since.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Only the lover fasts. Only the person who is invested in the work of love decides to mortify themselves for the greater good. And in this case, the good of the beloved. Joining me to have a conversation about this is Dr. David Deevil. He is an associate professor and chair of the theology department at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. And he is a prolific author, including of this piece in Catholic World Report. David, great to speak with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Marcus.
Always great to reconnect with you. Blessed Lent.
Blessed Lent to you, too. We're in it.
We are in it. And in the blink of an eye, we're going to reach Holy Week. So let's try to squeeze as much good out of the season as possible. And I'd like to begin by asking that simple question, why, the intentionality, what drives the Christian more than, say, you know, the Muslim who fasts? The intentionality is different.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people talking about various reasons to do fasting and ascetical practices, and many of them are true. But the truest one for the Christian is ultimately, as my title suggests, out of love. The whole point is to conform oneself to the Lord's will. And by giving up things, we train our will to say, the most important thing is God. As you know, as the Benedictines say, prefer nothing to Christ. And that's what we're doing when we're fasting from food or from any other good thing, is training that will to know that the most important thing, the one needful thing, is the Lord.
And that is the end, right? You and I have talked about this before, that everything we do in the Christian faith begins with the end in mind. So let's set that question of teleology here.
Yeah, the end is ultimately, although it's great, like I'm very pleased because I still haven't taken off the weight that I put on celebrating Christmas. The end of losing a bit of excess weight is good. The end of not spending too much, is good. All of the things that we give up have these this worldly goods, and it's fine to rejoice in those, but ultimately those are not the most important thing. We have to aim at that one thing needful, which is ultimately taking off anything that will stop us from following the Lord and doing his will, even when it's difficult.
That difficulty gets to the heart of a crucial point that you make in your piece too, which is voluntary renunciation of pleasures of the self. That's a bizarre concept for modern man.
Yeah, I think a lot of people really, they get a little nervous about this because they think, you're sort of a sadomasochist, or perhaps, you're somebody who really believes in works righteousness, that you're doing this weird thing to appease this deity or something like that. But that's really not what it's about. It's about the fact that we often, especially in a modern, rich, very rich and comfortable world, need to do things directly that stop us. There are what are known as passive penances, you know, the things that the Lord gives to us through the details of our lives that we, you know, that we have to take on. But most of us realize that that's not enough. What we need to do is do just as the disciples did after the Lord rose, even. They fasted and prayed a lot because they knew that they had to deny themselves intentionally in order to train themselves for those passive penances that the Lord would give them, whether that meant illness or bereavement of some sort or even martyrdom. It's saying, I'm going to put things away in order to be open to what God wants, that then allows us to be ready when God takes something much bigger away.
When you read Islamic theology and writings, you get the distinct sense that there's a very Pelagian concept of Ramadan. You do this because these are the ways you win the favor of Allah. But and unfortunately, you see modern man has that concept about religion. Can you comment on how sometimes even we as Catholics can think that way about our Lenten observances?
Yeah, I think we can all sort of think about it in terms of it's a scorecard.
Mm.
You know, that well, I've done this, this, and this, and well, maybe this thing that I gave up isn't big, but I'll add two or three more and I'll kind of even out the score. And that's really not the way that we should think about it. It really isn't a question of quantity per se, as much as it is the quality of our giving up. Have we given up something cheerfully? If it's hard, have we offered that difficulty and that sort of weakness that we have, that addiction to our own comfort to the Lord? It's really about that aspect of giving things up. This is the 800th anniversary of St. Francis of Assisi.
Mm.
And one of the things that he says in one of the biographies of him, he's asked by his disciples, you know, what's true happiness? And they propose all these things. And he says, none of those things are happiness. He says, what's true happiness is if I come back from a long trip, it's the middle of winter, I have icicles in my beard, I'm miserable, I've caught my skin in thorns, and I come back to my own friary, and they say, who is it? And I say, it's me, Brother Francis. And they don't let me in. They say, it's too late, come back in the morning. He says, if I can retain my cheerfulness and my abandonment to God's will in that moment, that is the truest sort of happiness. And that's what our asceticism is aimed at, is actually realizing that if we have God, we have everything. And if we don't have God, we don't even have the things we think we have.
If you don't mind me diving into something eminently practical, as Catholics, especially in the season of Lent, we see this in a very practical way in that we live in a very sugar-addicted culture or simple carb-addicted culture. And so on those days of fasting and abstinence, even that crash in your usual sugar intake induces a kind of crankiness. And so what you're saying is, the choice to be cheerful despite that is the exemplification of Christian charity.
That's right. That's right. And I think, you know, the readings that we had on Ash Wednesday, I think, exemplify this, you know, that we're not supposed to sort of show off how hard it is, right? But we're supposed to clean our face and have a smile about it, because that is enacting what we really want to get out of this, is that we really do feel that way. That ultimately, yeah, I'm happy no matter what happens. And it's, you know, it's funny how, this works. Like I said, you have these passive penances. These are the things that you encounter. Yesterday, for Ash Wednesday, there was an accident on the highway that we take. I was stuck. A 25-minute drive took an hour and 40 minutes. You know, everything went wrong. And, there's a tendency to be grumpy about this. But then you think, you know what, this is really what Lent is all about, is realizing that, hey, you know what, this is ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, not very important. I have the Lord. and the Lord, more importantly, has me. And that's really what it's all about, whether I'm hungry, whether I'm stuck on the highway, or whatever I am.
That sentiment you just expressed, it has to be at the heart of this entire Lenten season. So we're running out of time in this segment, but can you help us dial into that, that in this season, I have the Lord, but more importantly, the Lord has me?
Yeah, I think that's really got to be a big part of it, right? Lent is all about the big three, right? Fasting, almsgiving, and above all, prayer. And I think that that's something that most of us need is, we think of prayer as, we often think of prayer, even though we might profess to know otherwise, as simply about petitions and getting things. But ultimately, right, it's the acknowledgement of a loving Father. It's adoring Him and giving thanks to Him. And by doing that, by acknowledging His presence, we realize that we belong to Him. And that's the most important thing.
My guest is Dr. David Deevil. He is Associate Professor and Chair of the Theology Department at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. And we're talking about his article, Only the Lover Fasts in Catholic World Report, the heart and intentionality behind this season of Lent. Continuing on the other side, stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
In her diary, St. Faustina wrote, "If only I had a spiritual director from the beginning, I would not have wasted so many of God's graces. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? The nonprofit Revive app lets you meet virtually with certified spiritual companions, scheduling sessions at your convenience, helping you grow closer to Christ. Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3.
Hello, friends. Deacon Harold Burke Sivers here. And I haven't been this excited about an up-and-coming speaker for a long time, Dr. Marcus Peter. Dr. Peter has the gift of combining deep theological insight, wisdom, and knowledge with personal testimony and story in a way that makes the power of the church's teaching and God's love felt deeply in the heart of all who hear him. If you are looking for someone for your next conference, parish mission, or event, look no further than Dr. Marcus Peter.
Visit MarcusBPeter.com to book Dr. Marcus Peter to speak at your event. At the Ave Maria website, you can continue the discussion and education through the Ave Maria Radio's links to social media. Ave Maria Radio has accounts on Facebook, X, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the social media symbols at the top of your screen.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the Rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. Feeding 5,000 from a boy's 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, as recorded in John chapter 6, is quite a miracle. Yet the next day, Jesus downplays it in verse 27. "Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you." Likewise, God's provision of manna to the Israelites in the desert was also a great miracle, yet Jesus similarly downplays it in verse 49. "Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die." Jesus is clearly stating that his Eucharist is greater than both of these amazing miracles, and the Catholic Church absolutely takes him at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is FaithForensics.org.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Speed. I'm talking to my friend David Deevil, who is an author. Author extraordinaire, really. I actually wonder where he finds the time to sleep. He's also penned this great piece in Catholic World Report called Only the Lover Fasts. David, I've known you for some time now, and I know you're not ever going to boast about yourself, and so I'm going to do it for you. You never waste time. Any free time you have between loving your family and doing your prayer, your work diligently, you're also always putting forth stuff to teach about the faith. Can you share about how cultivating that kind of a diligent discipline can be a big part of the Lenten sacrifice?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to accept your compliment wholeheartedly, but it's probably a little exaggerated. But I do think that this is something that I've been thinking about, is just making every second count. Mm. Because, you know, this is a big part of, you know, the ashes that we received yesterday. You know, you might have heard repent and believe in the gospel, or you might have heard remember that you are to dust and that to dust you shall return. You know, there are different aspects of this, but one aspect of it is, yes, we are mortal. We will die. And thus, we have a frame around our lives. What do we want to put in that frame? And it's very easy to waste time. But if we actually are in touch with the Lord and we're doing the third part of that Lenten Troika, right, the prayer, I think it's very helpful to say, Lord, what do you want me to be doing right now? What is it that I can do? And it might not seem like an important thing. It might be a little duty. But, you know, as the saints, like St. Teresa of Lisieux say, right, if we do it with great love, it becomes a bigger thing than we could ever imagine it could be.
That concept applies, therefore, to every facet of our life. You know, if you're a husband and a father, you're called to be the most excellent husband and a father within your capacities, and laborer the same way, wife the same way, mother the same way. So can you help expand that to all these facets of natural life?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is one of the things is that a lot of people, I think, confuse the sacredness of certain things from the holiness. You know, the sacredness is that certain things are set apart. But holiness, it means that our whole life is set apart. And it's not necessarily set apart because we all are going to go and live in a Cistercian monastery or something like that. But they're set apart by the way in which we live. And the way in which we live is that we do make every second count, and that at every moment, as best we can, we are keeping in mind the Lord's presence and his care for us, the fact that we are his possession, and the fact that he can give us the power to do what he wants at any moment. And whatever that is, whether it's just, you know, cleaning up after dinner, or, you know, sweeping the floor, or writing an article, or playing catch with one of your kids, all of that stuff really does matter. And as we do it, we should be joyful that he's given us that time, that within that frame of our lives, this might not seem important in the grand scheme of things. It might not make us sort of famous in the world, but the most important kind of fame we have is the fame that applies to heaven. What does God think about what I'm doing? What do the saints and the angels think about what I'm doing? And that gives us a different perspective.
To deepen that perspective further, as we try to be cognizant about what God and the angels in heaven thinks about our actions, then we take a look at the act of, say, fasting, almsgiving, penance, that does something to my interiority. It's more than just saying no to pleasurable things.
Yeah, it's, well, that no is ultimately predicated, if it's going to be, you know, like I say in my article, only the lover truly fasts.
Mm.
What's that truly mean? Well, ultimately, it can't just be an act of renunciation. It has to be an act of renunciation in service of an act of submission and acceptance and positive grasping on to the Lord. I give up these things for him in order to hear his voice better, in order to be more capable of not only listening, but obeying in the deepest way. That stuff is tough, but that's positive and that's not negative.
That positivity of it is exactly where our minds ought to be, that I'm doing this because I'm in love. And so when we say no to these things, what's happening to our capacity for charity, that little vessel within us that is supposed to expand?
Yeah, well, ideally, if we really are doing it with that attitude, it should make us more capable. That principle of charity within us, which is indeed the Holy Spirit himself, right, we will be more and more able to be led by him. That everything that we do will be guided by him. There's, you know, another old Dominican, Gerald Van.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might know his books. The End of the Divine Pity is a very famous one. But, you know, he made this point that, you know, until everything that we do is grounded in prayer, and every prayer of ours, right, is enacted so that it will change our life, we're not doing it right. But when we do that, when we are completely grounded in prayer, and a prayer that is sort of supercharged by that, you know, that action of willingly giving up good things in order to say to the Lord, you know, mold me, you know, that's the most important thing that we can do. And if we're not doing it that way, we probably won't see as much change. And many of us will find that, you know, it seems as if we're not changing much, but it's got to be a consistent drip, if you will, of submission to God. And it's not just something in Lent, but it's throughout the year.
At the risk of sounding a little excessive, one of the examples you highlight is in Father Simon Tugwell's classic book, Ways of Perfection, where he talks about the early monastics. Now, again, caveat here, not everyone can do this, but it really does present a framework of how to think about this well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Father Tugwell in that book talks about the Desert Fathers, and he says, you know, we look from the outside and we see this stuff and it seems kind of eccentric, but it really is based in a question like, well, if the Lord has truly redeemed me, if he has made me a new creation, as St. Paul says, what does that mean for what it means to be human? You know, and some of the things that they did, I'm going to climb up on top of a pillar and pray for everybody for 20 years, or, you know, something like that, or I'm going to fast for 50 days in a row or something like that. Stuff, you know, might be a little eccentric, but when it comes out of that wholehearted desire to say, what is possible now? If I really prefer nothing to Christ, right, what is possible for my life? That's a really powerful place to be in. It's a scary place because God might just answer your prayer and give you something that seems well beyond anything that you've ever imagined. But that's really the goal.
The scary thing is, in that goal, you wind up wanting to give up everything else, and that can be trepidatious from the outset, but really that's the path to not just freedom, but flourishing as we were made to be.
Yeah, I think so. And I think giving up the cravings that we have for sin and for our own comfort and for, you know, avoiding God, anything that really puts us in a position which is kind of frightening, because we love our addictions in a way, right?
Mm.
How can I live without this little comfort that I have? But when we experience those moments of freedom, we suddenly realize, oh yeah, now I appreciate that thing that I used to think was necessary for me in a much, much bigger way. I can see how good it really is when I actually put it in its place. The chocolate donut is even more glorious once I've given it up and I don't have to have it for myself.
Right, because it doesn't have a hold over me. And that raises then the other vista. On the one hand, our addictions, but on the other hand, the attachments to sin that some of us do battle with, we wrestle with.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing is that, you know, I gave a sort of, a lighter example of it, I guess, or maybe heavier since we're talking about donuts. But sins themselves are like that. We cannot get rid of these attachments that we have to certain kinds of resentment. People talk about, certain kinds of lust, and they don't bring us happiness, right? Because anybody who's experienced any of these things knows that they feel like chains.
Mm.
But that's the goal, is to actually have the true freedom that does not have us, people will talk about, so-and-so lives rent-free in your head. Well, that's an uncomfortable position to have that, right? And so to have the freedom to actually not have this enemy, real or imagined, stuck in my consciousness actually frees up a lot of my energy to actually love other people and to do what God wants me to do. And that's true freedom. And that's what we're aiming for every time we give up our will in one of these little ascetical practices, is to say, Lord, I want to be ordered according to the way you order me. I want to be conformed to the way of thinking that you have.
I'm reminded of St. Thomas Aquinas and his amazing clarity of intellect as he soared the heights of natural reason and inspired reason by grace. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that he had no chains tethering him to the lower things. David, thank you very, very much for your time. As usual, the time just flies by whenever I'm speaking with you. God bless you.
God bless you, Marcus. Thanks for having me on.
My guest has been Dr. David Deevil. He is Associate Professor and Chair of the Theology Department at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. And David has been walking us through the need to be loving, to really will the good of the sacrifices that we're doing, because we're doing them not just for ourselves, but ultimately for God, for the desire of deeper union with God. And so may this Lenten season be a fruitful experience for you. Stay tuned, I'm Marcus Peter.